This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
WGR.
It's hard to find an expert more dedicated than John Clayton.
Sports Radio 550.
He's the consummate pro.
It's John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
With Shope and the Bulldog.
Brought to you by Northwest Bank. Make the switch to Northwest Bank and get back to living.
Wow, it's just like it's a Wednesday in November with that open plane with our man John Clayton on the Wester Hotline. I am the Bulldog Mike Shope. Sadly, John here has the day off today, John, so you're just stuck with me.
How did Mike get the day off?
He just decided he wanted to go see the Blue Jays and the Red Sox this afternoon up at Rogers Center in Toronto, so he's sitting in a nice third baseline seat watching David Price and the Red Sox play the Blue Jays. And
wow.
I don't even know how that game is going. I don't know if Kyle just said it.
He gets to call the shots, just say, hey, I'm out of here, see you, bye.
Hey, he's been dealing with me. I've been running around for weeks here just doing different Fridays off with my son's hockey, so he owed me one. So no big deal. So you, sir, like you caused some waves. You're not quite the Game of Thrones finale, but this the Jets could trade Le'Veon Bell thing last week. I just saw that cropping up all over the place on Twitter. Were you suggesting that they will do that, or that it's something that if they wanted to do it, it would be financially good for the team acquiring him? Like, what do you have on Bell and the Jets right now, John?
It's just Adam Gase. I mean, again, he's the acting general manager. Nothing's active right now, but I think you can see you've got a coach who's probably going to get a GM that's going to be pretty close to him, taking the same philosophy that you don't want to pay a running back. And so $13.1 million for a running back isn't really what he wants. And, of course, if you can get a trade at some point, you take all the guarantees and everything out. And so the logic says is that it's not like they're actively going to do anything with him at the moment, but if somebody's going to call and need a running back, they're going to listen. Because Adam Gase, because remember, he's a disciple of Mike Martz. Even though Mike had a Hall of Fame running back in Marshall Faulk, the idea is to pass the football. Now, Bell fits perfectly in this idea that he's, one of the best pass-catching running backs in the league, but still, you've got a coach who doesn't believe in paying running backs. And at $13.1 million, it's maybe going to be more next year than this year. I could easily see him trading him if there's enough interest in a team trying to pick him up.
How much does Adam Gase deserve as much power as he seemingly has acquired here, at least for the time being, if not in the long run? Because if he has, say, as much say in who his GM ultimately is as, say, Sean McDermott had when he got here, I feel like he chose Brandon Bean to be the GM. Does Gase deserve that?
No, he doesn't deserve it with a 23-25 record. And he had control of the 53-man roster, but look what he ended up doing. He chased away some of their best players. He traded away Jay Ajayi. He didn't, but he got Mike Tannenbaum to trade Jay Ajayi. They traded away Jarvis Landry, Pro Bowl guy. They let Mike Pouncey go. He had a Pro Bowl season. I mean, he let so many guys, and most of the guys were on offense. Remember that. And so, Adam is one where he wants the locker room to respond positively. If there's something there that he doesn't like, then he's going to speak up, and he's going to do that. And so, has he earned it? Absolutely not. I mean, because, again, one of the reasons that he got fired was a below-average record and the fact that he probably got too involved in personnel.
Seems like maybe he might say he didn't get a chance to have the deck fully cleared. Right. There are some similarities, I think, to maybe he and McDermott. It seemed like Gase was on a bit of a culture mission. Right. That's why Jay Ajayi gets left home before the opener in Seattle that one year. And Ndamukong Suh and Landry, these are guys that maybe don't have the best reputations as being team first guys. And maybe Gase would say in his defense that he didn't get to finish the job, whereas here McDermott and Bean, I think, are now done sort of shedding the guys that they didn't want because of high price tags or whatever, some personality or character thing that didn't jive with their idea of what the culture should be. I wonder if Gase feels like he got shafted.
Probably did, and I think that's just the unfortunate bad nature of the National Football League. The NFL stands for not for long. And so if you're trying to turn a program around, literally, if you tear a team down, it's going to take you 4 to 5 years, if not longer, because it takes you 2 years to build up each unit, 2 years on offense and 2 years on defense. And if you get fired after year three in 48 games, then you really haven't had the proper time. And you look at and you see the perennial playoff teams, or at least the teams that are in the playoffs 3 out of 5 or 4 out of 5 years, they're the ones with more stability. It's the Sean Paytons with him there with Mickey Loomis. It's Seattle with Pete Carroll and John Snyder. You just go down the list. It was there for most of the time with Green Bay, with Ted Thompson and Mike McCarthy. But the more you keep changing, the worse it gets. And you can see, for example, with the 8 changes this year, there's already problems. And again, you see it with the Jets because now you have a coach who gets there and he wasn't on the same page as the general manager as far as personnel. You see it down in Tampa Bay because, they're switching to a 3-4 defense and they just simply don't have 3-4 personnel and they lose Jason Pierre-Paul. And so it's like, in the end, you need continuity and you need the front office to work together. Unfortunately for the Jets, that didn't come down together.
John Clayton on the Western Hotline with us here on WGR. So how's Bell in all of this stuff with the Jets? Did I see a quote from him late last week saying, don't believe everything you read, or that something like that? How's he feeling about how this is all going in New York?
I think he feels good because he's got guaranteed money. He can't feel good because I think he now knows he's got a coach that's not totally in his corner. And it's not a personal thing. It's not like he doesn't like Le'Veon Bell, but Adam Gase just doesn't believe in money going to a running back. And so because of that, I think that he's got to be apprehensive, but it doesn't seem as though he cares. And the reason he doesn't care, he's not there. He's going to attend the mini camp, but here's a new coach, a new offense, and you want to try to get together with him, and he's not. He's training on his own. Hey, that's fine if you're Edger and James. You got Peyton Manning there. You've been there in the system for 3-4 years, and you want to go down to Miami and train and get your body right and your mind right. Well, here's a guy that didn't play last year. He got out of shape as the year was going on. He got too fat, and now he's training on his own, but is he going to do it the right way? And after missing a year, remember, here's where the danger of all this is. And what we saw today with Reuben Foster, you come and it's the shark nature of going in the first OTA or the first mini camp or the first day of training camp, and you go there and you have a tendency, because if you didn't train your tendons right, you're going to blow out an ACL, you're going to blow out Achilles. You watch over the course of this week, there's going to be 3 or 4 more Achilles/ACL injuries that are going to happen, because if you didn't train the tendons right, something's going to pop.
Let's stay in the division here for a bit, because it's pretty interesting to me. With all this, I don't know if it's exactly controversy, but the Jets are certainly interesting. This story about the coach not wanting the high-priced free agent and all this stuff, and then the GM, running the draft, running free agency, he gets fired. Not right after the draft either. It's like there was still somewhat of a power struggle that went on for a couple of weeks before McCagnan finally got ousted. Yet the Jets are mostly viewed, I think, John, despite a new coach and a new offensive system for Sam Darnold going into his second year, but first year in a new system, as being ahead of the Bills. And I wonder if this instability up top maybe brings them back a little bit enough for the Bills to perhaps pass them.
It could, and one of the reasons that the Jets are ahead of the Bills right now is because Sam Darnold is ahead of Josh Allen. And you've got a coach who is real good with quarterbacks. So good for a matter of fact that, he's the one who actually got more out of Jay Cutler than most, because they actually got along. And so if he can take Sam Darnold to a higher level, which I would imagine is going to be better this year, that's going to help, and that's going to keep things again. And remember, they've been actively spending now for the last couple years, and so maybe for personnel they're a little bit ahead. But now here's where the problem's going to come in for the Jets, is if indeed Adam has problems with some of the personalities. And remember, part of the reason that Christopher Johnson ended up firing Mike McCagnan is that he took chances on guys that had character issues. and you've seen with the arrests that they've had, the DUIs that they've had, all those different things, you know, that could be a problem. And I can guarantee from what we saw of Adam down in Miami, he's simply not going to tolerate it. I mean, he's going to try to, if he doesn't like something and it's not going to go, he's going to get rid of the guy. I mean, you know, the Darren Lee thing was no surprise. You know, I know that everybody's saying, how can you take a first-round pick like Darren Lee, you know, middle first-round pick just from a couple years ago, and trade him for a six? But if you look at the first-round trades after 3 years for guys that are 18 and lower, it's all fifth, sixth-round picks. And that's just because what happens is a team that picks him up is picking up a guaranteed contract. And so you're unloading a guaranteed contract, and that gets things going. But, you know, if Adam comes in there and does the Jay Ajayi-type trade and some of the other moves, that's going to hurt, not help.
The other thing on Lee is, didn't everyone in the league know he was pretty much a spare part with the Jets anyways?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's why, I mean, I think that Mike Maccagnan was holding out for a five. But if you look at, like, for example, the 2015 draft, I mean, there was about five trades at the bottom of the round that were virtually for nothing. I mean, you know, that was the, you know, fifth, sixth-round pick. You know, it was Stephon Anthony, and it was Lakin Tomlinson, and Darius Randall. I mean, those all guys went for a song. I mean, then you saw the move up higher where Danny Shelton, after going into his fourth year, was traded away for a third-round pick, but they had to kind of give back a fifth-round pick just to make that work. So the equivalent value, if you're dumping a player that's a former first-round pick with a guaranteed contract, is getting a fifth- or sixth-round pick. That's why, you know, Adam didn't sweat it. As soon as he got the offer from the Chiefs, he just said, fine, sixth-round, good, you're gone.
We will get to the Bills here with John Clayton, who's joining us on the Western Hotline. But before we do, the Dolphins. People have been talking about tanking. They've traded for Josh Rosen. Of course, they changed coaches. Gase is now with the Jets and pick up a former New England assistant to be the head coach now. Like, what's the outlook there? I would imagine pretty bleak.
Yeah, pretty bad. And because, you know, they, even though they don't admit it, I think everybody understands the way that they've dumped talent. They're trying to get in a position to get a quarterback next year. Now, if Josh Rosen goes down there and does well, it probably screws up their plans, but at least they know they have a quarterback. But also, if they don't win, I mean, Josh Rosen's in the same position he is this year, because it's pretty clear with a better group of quarterbacks coming out next year that they're going to take one and then get rid of Josh Rosen. So he may be with, you know, three teams in 3 years, but, I mean, you look at it, I mean, I think they only have three Pro Bowl players left in the team, you know, after getting rid of the Mike Pouncey's and getting rid of Jarvis Landry and Cameron Wake and all those different players. I mean, there's no team in football that has fewer Pro Bowl players than the Dolphins. And, you know, that's not necessarily good. And so I would have to think it's going to be a long season. And all that's going to do is help the Patriots, because, you know, what's happened in three of the last 4 years, and at least you can credit Adam Gase for this, is that, you know, in the home game between New England and Miami, they've won three out of the last four. But now, if the Dolphins are going to be a bad team, that's going to be another win and a possible 5-1, 6-0 season in the division for the Patriots.
You got to really wonder about Rosen at this point, John. Like, he was on a terrible Cardinal team. And, you know, I'm sure he didn't do himself any favors with his play either, but I think he was in pretty tough there. I think most people acknowledge that. And now Miami wants to see if he can play, but, I mean, good luck. I mean, good luck finding out if you can play with, I mean, what do you got around him?
Not much. I mean, I guess you can say that we talk about an unfair reputation, but it's like, hey, if you want the first pick in the draft, Josh Rosen's your guy, because at least with how he played last year, with all the problems that they had. I mean, they only had maybe two or three legitimate receivers. They were bad at tight end, had seven guys on the offensive line on injured reserve. They lost the entire starting offensive line. And then the play calling at the running back position, you know, didn't get the running back, David Johnson, to get yards. And so it all failed. But then part of the problem is, I think you can see that personality-wise or whatever it is, it just didn't go with Josh Rosen. I know Josh was complaining, maybe whining a little bit, that the general manager, Steve Keim, hadn't sent anything to him in 2 to 3 weeks or even a couple months. Well, I mean, you know, you kind of get the feeling with that personality that Josh Rosen had, you know, it didn't win over the front office, and certainly it didn't win over the players on the team.
I mean, I wanted to ask you about that. I'm putting off the Bills here, but we'll squeeze it in. I promise.
Yeah.
I don't know. You don't really care, John. I was telling the audience that like, we just talk about football in general. You're fine. But this thing with Keim not talking to him and telling him what was up. You know, they did choose to draft him. Like, they knew his personality. They did their homework. Like, they made that choice. They traded up last year to do it. I mean, I just don't think at all that is how you should do business in any line of work. Where you, like, but especially with a top 10 draft pick quarterback, to just sort of freeze him out. I mean, I don't know. I don't think that's good on Arizona at all.
No, I agree. I would agree with that. I mean, they did give him the benefit of getting top 10 money, you know, because everything is all guaranteed. You know, the fifth year option now is at the high level, not the low level. And so, you know, they did financially take care of him.
Yeah.
So you can say that was the positive. But yeah, you're right. And I think that, I mean, you can just see the strain. For example, was it fair to Josh Rosen that on the first week that they started off-season program that, and he was the first guy in the building. He was actually there before Cliff Kingsbury, that by Tuesday and Wednesday of that week, they're bringing in Skyler Murray to be for his visit. And it's like, oh, couldn't you have scheduled it the week before when Josh wasn't there? They purposely didn't allow Josh to have a press conference, and so what he had to do was go on SITV and have a press conference and kind of express his frustration. And you can see even with some of the things that he was tweeting out that he was upset. So you're right. I mean, they didn't treat him well. I mean, they treated him like they wanted him to get out of there. And sure enough, I mean, you knew once they made the selection of Skyler Murray that they were going to trade him.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
sure enough, they did by the second day of the draft.
I guess I am naive enough to have just assumed all through this process that I'm talking about pre-draft, figuring out what they're going to do, that they would have been at least communicating to him. You know, they could have even been lying, but I mean, just talking to him about what's going on, or at least admitting like we're not sure what we're doing. We'll keep you appraised. I think it's just stunning that the organization basically froze him out.
Yeah, I mean, the coach did talk to him. I mean, it wasn't like this was a collective effort, but the coach, I mean, Cliff Kingsbury, did stay in contact with him, did call him on the time it was traded, and so at least there was a communication from the coach, but nothing from the GM. But, one thing with Josh Rosen, I mean, he's one of those guys that, he's a hard guy sometimes to communicate with. I mean, he'll always ask questions when you tell him something, and if you ask him a question, he'll come back with a question. I mean, I know talking to him on network radio, I mean, he's sometimes just gives one-word answers. And I know that we got so frustrated on Sirius one time that Pat Kerwin and I were talking to him, and Pat just threw up his hands and says, "Hey, so, Josh, what interests you the most?" And he goes, "Tennis." Like, okay. Then somebody in the organization for Arizona, I don't know who it is, leaked out that Josh is an environmentalist. Now, I don't know if that's good, bad, or indifferent, but it's like, they're saying things like that. So it's one where it's better for him to get out of there.
Yeah.
And again, he can thank him at least for giving him a good contract.
I wonder how the GM there, Keim, gets to trade up to draft a quarterback 10th overall. It's a disaster. The team's a disaster. He's kind of a disaster, away from the job. And then hires a coach who's under 500 and gets to draft another quarterback. I'm stunned the guy gets to keep his job.
Yeah, and clearly his job's in jeopardy right now, but he's a good GM. I mean, look what he was able to do with Bruce Arians as a coach. I mean, he built that team up to a point where it did get to a conference championship game as a perennial playoff team, and I think he's still one of the brighter general managers in the game. But, you can see what ended up happening last year is that, Mike Bidwell was hoping to get an offensive coach. They hired Steve Wilks. Wilks came in there and was terrible, and, the offense was awful, and so they ended up losing. And you can see, after the season that they were going to keep Keim, but they probably Bidwell went to him and says, "I want you to get an offensive coach. I told you to get one last year, and you didn't do it. You better get one this year." And some of the offensive coaches just didn't want to come there, and so end up scrambling around, and you get Kingsbury in the air raid offense.
It's going to be really interesting to watch and see how that all unfolds for sure. All right, the Bills. I spent a little time here earlier today talking with Arcel Capaccio, John, about Josh Allen and what's a good year? Like what's a reasonable expectation to have? And he, as he so often does, drew, I think, a very good comparison between Allen going into year two and what you saw from Trubisky last year with Chicago. Which was 3,200 yards in 14 games. So over a full season, you're talking about close to 3,700 yards or so. 24 touchdowns, 12 picks. So add one or two to each column there if you want for a full season. Do you think that that's a good step for Josh Allen?
I think it'd be a great step. And the great part is maybe I think that is a very fair comparison because I remember early in the season, if you look at Mitch Trubisky, once he got through the 15-play script, he struggled. And I give Matt Nagy just great credit for developing him and getting him better as the season goes on. And Josh, when he came in of the first-round picks last year, he was the most behind. I think that's just understandable. I mean, he had some of the best talent. I mean, that arm is just absolutely incredible. But, I mean, you knew it was going to take time. And so it may be a very similar, on the similar path, where he starts out the season. Now, again, it's not going to be like a script issue or anything like that, but he may start out slow. But if they can bring him along as the year goes on, yeah, I think it can be a pretty fair season. And I agree. It's not going to be a 4,000-yard passing year. I think you can see that they need to make sure that they run the ball, and they certainly have enough running backs right now. where you give the front office and that a lot of credit is that, I mean, could they end up getting more players for him? I mean, they've way overboard on offensive line. I mean, they could have four or five new starters on the offensive line.
Yeah.
They got skilled players, tight ends. They're loading them up at running backs, and so they've been very aggressive in trying to surround him, more than anything else. And so that will take time because there's going to be so many new players just to kind of integrate and get on the same page that, slow start's probably going to happen, but, at least the commitment was there not to starve him like, Josh Rosen was starved last year.
Yeah, you could have five starters at new positions. I think Deion Dawkins is a part of their five, but if someone, Ty Ensicki, goes and plays left tackle because Cody Ford, the second-round pick, is going to be the right tackle, then maybe Dawkins ducks inside and plays guard, in which case you would very likely have five players that are at least in new positions, four of them new to the team overall.
Mm-hmm.
Is what might be happening there.
Yeah, but again, it's like and it's funny because, we're talking about the bad things that were going on in Arizona, but, when I size everything up, particularly from the draft, and even when you look at the off season, I think that you have to make the argument that the two teams that did the best for themselves talent-wise was the Arizona Cardinals and the Buffalo Bills because, again, they did it in volumes. I mean, you look at the 15 players that they signed in free agency, unrestricted free agency. I mean, you look what they did in the draft. That bodes well for the Bills. The Cardinals, they were one of the most aggressive team in street free agents and free agency. They ended up getting 10 guys in free agency, 11 guys in the draft. So, I mean, at least the numbers are there, and now it's a matter of putting it all together.
Yeah, they put one contract is like a somewhat of a whopper, in that Mitch Morse might be the highest paid center in the league now. But everything else they did in free agency, John, the way I understand it anyway, looking at the different cap websites, I think they can walk away from just about anything without much penalty if it doesn't go well.
No, so, that's the thing I did like about what they did, because you're right, and I'll explain the Mitch Moore situation, is that, they kept everything, at $8 million, $9 million or less. They didn't overspend, and that's the big problem in free agency, because if you overspend, and the guy doesn't play like a Pro Bowl player, you're cutting him after 2 years. And so with the number that they signed and the fact that they didn't go overboard, that's good. I think that you can see on the Mitch Morris thing, that was a pure thing of total need. If you look at the way free agency was and the center position overall, there was two legitimate guys at the center position, Mitch Morris being one, and Paradise, who ended up going to Carolina, and there was only two legitimate centers in the draft. And so you only have four options, and you want a center, and they wanted a center. Remember, they backed it up in case it didn't go with Mitch Morris, and mm-hmm. they had Spencer Long to move in there, but now they can just have Spencer as maybe a utility player or starting guard. But if they wanted a quality center, there was only four available, and at least they get one out of the four in Morris.
So you add it all up. Like, do you think some of the love, I don't know how much you pay attention to it, but the Bills have gotten, they got their share of fans out there in the media, the national media, saying, like, look out, they're up and coming, they're a surprise team. How do you feel about that?
I think that's the case. I mean, it's like I'm not going to promote them as a playoff team. I mean, I think that this is the turnaround year. And normally, if you're having a big turnaround, it takes like 3-4 years. Usually, by that third year, things start to go together. But what you like is that, and where I was hoping they would do a little bit more in the first couple years, you know, getting more volume is because it was like they were breaking it down as opposed to building it back up. But where I think that they have to get the love is how aggressive they were at reasonable prices of getting talent in there. And I think they did it the smart way. So, again, there should be a good improvement on the team this year.
All right, John. This has been wonderful, thorough. We didn't get around the league very much. We ended up just staying in the AFC East with a little dabble of the Cardinals in there. But that's how it goes. Time only allows for so much. Your spring good? Summer looking promising?
Yep.
Everything good with you?
Everything's good. I mean, staying busy, so that's always a good thing.
All right, man. We appreciate the time very much, John. Thanks for the visit, and we'll look forward to talking with you pretty soon, I'm sure.
Okay, sounds good.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.